Welcome to Blue Dot. Here is your icebreaker.
Here's a joke. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Two.
To who?
To whom?
That, of course, was Rico Galliano from the Dinner Party Download. It airs on Sunday evenings here on NSPR. Recently, the crew announced they're going to be doing a live show in our very own backyard, Lassen Volcanic National Park. Let's find out what it's all about with a suave, sophisticated public radio personality, me, and Rico, co-host with Brendan Francis Noonan of the Dinner Party Download. Rico, welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for that fine introduction. And it's a pleasure to be here with a real public radio personality, you.
Yeah, that's me. First of all, I'm really curious. We science types are that way. How did you guys come up with the concept of Dinner Party Download?
That is a great question. We were, myself and Brendan Francis Noonan were working on Marketplace, the vaunted public radio show. And I was a reporter, Brendan was a producer, and we loved working on the show, and it's a great show. But the way we like to put it is it's a show about money, and we don't have any money. So on our off hours, we would think about the show that we would do that like truly spoke to our deepest, you know, loves and desires. And we were the kind of guys that always liked arts and entertainment and culture and food and drink. And people at parties would always ask us about these things. Where should we eat? What movie should we see, et cetera? And I remember me and Brendan were sitting around trying to come up with a show idea. And he said, I just want to do a show where we get to talk about all this stuff that we talk about at dinner parties. And I was like, aha. And we decided to do basically what is an arts and culture magazine show, and it's themed after a dinner party.
That's really cool to hear, because for me personally, when people ask me about my show, I like to tell them, well, it's a show about science, but it's from the perspective of talking to somebody like me with a guest, where we're just having a beer in a bar and talking about these things casually. It's not, you know, real formal. It's more of a, just a natural conversation you might have over a glass of wine or a beer about something really cool.
Exactly. Many have said that the reason why radio is as sort of addictive as it is because there's something intimate about it. And I think it basically radio is the closest that you come to replicating that kind of feeling. It's like I'm having this conversation with you in your car or in your living room or something. We're just hanging out and talking about stuff. And I think it underlies a lot of public radio, that feeling of like informed, but informal and casual at the same time.
And it's just you, the listener, and I'm talking to you right now, the person listening to this. We're doing this just for you.
Yep, there's one person listening, and it's you.
And there are many of you, we hope.
Yes.
For those of our listeners who haven't heard the show, and I imagine there might be a couple, give us the basic format. How does it work?
Well, like I said, it's themed after a dinner party, so it's basically... We like to say it's an arts and culture show that is formatted like a dinner party. So we start every show with a joke. That would be an icebreaker, as we call it. And it's usually told by some famous person that we're going to speak to later in the show. We have a small talk segment, which is us talking to a journalist about some bizarre news story of the week that seems sort of fun that you would discuss at a dinner party. We have a history segment, aka our cocktail segment, where we say, tell you something that happened in history, and then we get a bartender to pair a themed cocktail that he devised that's sort of themed after the history. We then have a guest of honor who's a famous person that we talk to. We have an etiquette segment because everybody needs good manners at a dinner party, and it's basically taking like the last celebrity who should ever give you advice on manners to give you advice on manners. We've had Mel Brooks on the show, for instance. The late and great Elaine Stritch gave our listeners some advice on how to be polite, which was a terrible and great idea. And then we do, what do we end with? One for the Road is a little song that you can listen to on your way home from a dinner party. There's all sorts of stuff. We have a segment called Chattering Class where we sort of teach you the basics you need to know about an interesting topic that you'd discuss at a party. And like that, it's a pretty fast-moving hour. We pack it with a ton of stuff, far too much, frankly. It's a lot of work, but it's fun.
It is fun. I enjoy listening to it very much. It's a nice way to spend an hour on my weekend.
Thanks. I'm glad that you like it. You tweet very nice things about us, I have to say. I've noticed it.
I'm generally a kind tweeter.
I've noticed. Yeah. You're a science teacher, right?
I am.
See, I think all of my science teachers were always nice. Are all science teachers nice? I think they are.
I'm hoping so. At least I feel like the ones that I know are fairly nice.
Sure. There's something about science that makes you not be a jerk, I think.
Well, and there's something about people get intimidated by science. So I think if your science teacher is nice and helps you not be intimidated and learn to enjoy it and engage your natural curiosity, that's my whole goal. And that's what this show's all about, is engage everybody's natural curiosity. I like thinking of myself as a science teacher for everybody listening. Let's talk about the show coming up that you're doing, because it's really exciting. What's the concept or theme for it? The idea of disconnecting from your touchscreen lifestyle. Tell us a bit about that idea and where it came from.
Well, we did this actually first. We did kind of a much less involved version of the special show that we're going to be doing for you guys a few years ago at the Henry Miller Library. And they were curating a whole evening of shows. And my co-host, Brendan Francis Noonan, was one of the people that came up with this idea. The idea was just that they were going to have these audio shows that you could listen to out under the stars. And we put together this hour-long show, and it was kind of like our regular show with the same kind of guests, but we all aimed it at, we kind of wanted only stories that would sound good or make sense to be hearing while you were looking up at the stars. And we just realized when we actually aired the thing that it really kind of worked, and that radio is a great way. It's one of the few forms of, medium, because it's a non-visual medium, that you really can turn off all your screens. You can put everything aside. You can just sit there and look at something beautiful and have these words and these sounds maybe augment what you're looking at in the environment that you're in. And so we've now upped the ante. We got a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, and in conjunction with the National Parks, we sort of pitched them this idea that we would sort of celebrate nature by creating this audio experience that people could listen to and was designed to be listened to underneath the stars, or at least outdoors with your phone turned off. And just especially in a world that we're all living in now with social media everywhere, it just seems like a rare occasion to be able to disconnect from all that stuff, you know?
Give us a sense of what this is going to look like. You're going to be on stage at the amphitheater at Komyamani Visitor Center in Lassen Volcanic National Park. What are we going to see when we come watch your show?
Think of it as kind of a listening party. We'll be there to introduce. We're constructing this hour-ish or so audio show, and it's going to be a very sound-rich show that has a little bit of a story to it, which we can talk about in a minute. But we're going to be there to introduce the audio, but we're also going to be serving food, since food is such a big part of our show. There's going to be catered food. There will be beer and wine, possibly free, possibly for purchase. Either way, I'm sure your listeners will be interested in that, at least some of you. And we will have a live guest or two. The guest will be cool for sure, maybe cool and famous. We're working on it. But you'll be there, is my understanding. So we'll have at least one famous person on hand.
And at least cool.
Yes. And we're also encouraging people to show up early, take advantage of the beautiful park, and maybe hang out there during the day. And then as day turns to night, we will be running this show, which, as I said, is designed to be sort of listened to under the stars. And it's going to be a new moon that night, June 24th. So it should be beautiful.
And the new moon means that there won't be any moon interfering with the starlight. And Lassen Volcanic National Park has some of the most beautiful dark skies you'll find anywhere.
Is it an official dark sky area?
It is. Yes.
That is a deeply exciting thing for me, because I live in Los Angeles, California. So it's like once every couple of months I can be like, oh, Orion. I think that's Orion.
Yeah.
I grew up a little bit in West Virginia, still in kind of one of the major towns in West Virginia, but it was a little bit easier to get out to the stars, and it is definitely the thing that I miss the most. And I love desert camping, and one of the reasons is because you actually can see stars if you get a few hours outside of LA. You can at least see some, but I have a feeling it's going to be like pretty spectacular.
It's a beautiful sky. There's something about it. Of all the dark night skies I've ever seen, and I've seen some good ones, it's my favorite.
Oh, man. That's definitely one of the reasons we picked that place. There are a lot of national parks to choose from, and we picked Lassen, so you should be proud.
And we are. And why did you pick Lassen?
Well, there's that. The other thing is that there's a freaking volcano in it, and that's just cool.
Well, that's certainly true. That's where the volcanic part comes in the name.
That's not going to blow up, right, while we're there?
I cannot guarantee that.
Because we got insurance, so somebody thinks it's a pretty good bet that it won't. So
you got volcano insurance? Like earthquake insurance? They're running commercials about that in L.A. too? Like, you know, get your earthquake insurance and make sure your house is repaired after the big one.
I don't know. I didn't secure the insurance. But if there is such a thing as volcanic insurance, I want to see what the policy looks like. That's something special.
The odds are we're pretty safe. One thing about volcanoes is they let you know they're waking up before they do anything. So
that's true. If it's smoking a week or so before the show, we might change the date.
Or try to get closer.
Is that how it goes?
We'll talk about that later. Can you share any of your guests with us?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Speaking of the night sky, Neil deGrasse Tyson, the great astrophysicist, is part of the show.
I've heard of him. Yeah.
Yes. Not live, I'm pretty sure, but he's definitely part of the radio show. Also, the musician Feist, you will hear, the great Canadian musician, who also, by the way, played with one of my favorite bands, Kings of Convenience. That's the first time I heard her, but she's become quite a big star since then. Robin Pecknold of the band Fleet Foxes. And we're working on some others that I am not at liberty yet to disclose, but I think there will be at least one or two other big names in there. And the concept of the show is that Brendan and I are exactly who we are. We're these city-bound radio types who spend all our time indoors, and we're told by one of our guests that maybe we should get out more. And we go through a magic doorway and find ourselves in the great outdoors, and we just kind of wander through all these different naturescapes and meet up with these various guests along the way. We have a night picnic with Neil deGrasse Tyson, and Brendan talks with Feist about kayaking.
So that sounds like fun.
It'll be interesting.
But in all honesty, for you personally, do you get to connect with the natural world very often?
You know this because it sounds like you spend some time in Los Angeles. I don't know what part of Los Angeles you spent your time in, but the interesting thing is that it is simultaneously the most urban and concrete and just non-natural environment ever, but it's also really near a huge expanse of different natural landscapes. So you can go not very far away, you know, a 20-minute, half-hour drive, and suddenly you're way up in Pine Tree Mountains. Another half-hour drive, you're out by the ocean. But what's amazing is that if you're living day-to-day in L.A., you kind of forget that. I live in the east side of L.A., far from the beach. And you know, my girlfriend and I all suddenly go, oh, let's go to the beach. And you get to the beach and you're like, oh, yeah, this is here. This is amazing. Particularly Malibu and these cliffs and everything. So I will say that I'm trying to get into nature more since doing this show, actually, that we're talking about. Because we spoke to, do you know the journalist Florence Williams?
I'm not familiar, no.
She has a new book out called The Nature Fix. And among
I do know who you're talking about now. Yes, I do know. I think she was a guest on Jennifer Jewell's program. Yeah.
She should be on everybody's program. It's an amazing book. And among other things, she talks about all the scientific evidence that just being out in nature is kind of a cure-all for everything that ails us in the modern world. It can help you sleep better. It can help cure depression. Nations where the population doesn't get out much, they have more myopia because it turns out sunlight may have some role in shaping the retina. Things like that. Mm-hmm. And ever since reading this book, it's been like, I've got to get out more. To hell with meditation. I just have to go and find some trees. So I have been trying to get out to the coast more and up in the wildlife. And it's around here. Don't let anyone tell you LA has none of it.
Oh, it is. When I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, I went to high school in Reseda.
Oh, yeah.
And after school, just about every day, or every other day at least, I would jump in my little Opel Kadett station wagon and jam up into the Santa Monica Mountains up off Stunt Road. And that overlooks the Malibu coast. And that was the place I used to just go to get my nature fix all the time.
It is unparalleled. You realize why people with a lot of money decide to build their homes in Malibu. It's really gorgeous.
What do you hope listeners take away from this experience of listening to you on the radio and those people that will be able to be fortunate enough to be there?
I hope it's an excuse to unplug for a second. I know that that's, I mean, what's funny is that I have a very hard time unplugging as a public radio guy, as a journalist, modern journalist. You have to be online all the time. It's kind of expected that you're tweeting all the time, mm-hmm. that you're Facebooking all the time, that you're kind of hyping your show all the time. And I kind of like, I mean, I can tell you that our social media, we have a dedicated social media person on our staff. And she's like, you created a show and the point is that no one is allowed to tweet while it's happening. Are you kidding me? She's so angry at us. But I kind of like that we're giving everybody permission for at least just an hour to just relax and at least think about and hopefully appreciate something beautiful. I mean, even folks who can't make it out to the park for our listening party, we're encouraging them to download the show on podcast and to maybe, you know, find a quiet night or just, you know, lay out on the roof of their car out in their front lawn or in their driveway or something and just take an hour to chill and listen and have a good time and laugh.
Hook the phone up to your UE Boom speaker or whatever and put the phone down and let it play and just lay out in the backyard and let a little nature wash over you for an hour.
Please do, but screen down. Put the phone screen facing down.
Yeah. Thanks. You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Rico Galliano about the Dinner Party Download's live event from Lassen Volcanic National Park. Stay with us. And we're back talking with Rico Galliano, half the hosting team of the Dinner Party Download from American Public Media. You know, it's amazing. It's not been that long that we've had this culture of cell phones. And when you go anywhere now, you just see people standing there interacting with their phones constantly. Mm. And I wonder what that's doing to us from an evolutionary standpoint.
I think about this all the time. There was that movie that Spike Jonze did that was nominated for a few Oscars a few years ago, Her. And I mm-hmm. felt like that was the first movie to capture it, this feeling where you look down, you look at a subway car and everybody's looking at their phones, or you come out of the subway, everyone's looking at their phones, you're waiting for a taxi or at a stand and everyone's looking at their phones. It used to be that you'd look at each other. And, you know, I don't want to say the good old days because, you know, there was a lot of bad things about the past as well. And we were less able to communicate with each other. I like knowing where I'm going with GPS on my phone and not having to pull over and pull out a map and figure out where I am. But I think it's nice every now and then to remember that, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we got by pretty well without all this technology. And I think it lends a sense of peace. You know, I mean, like you read this book, The Nature Fix, there's some downsides to being totally hooked in all the time. So hopefully we can unhook for a while.
I think that's a great idea. And it just that that intentionality of putting the phone aside for just a little while and just experiencing your friends or your backyard or your pets or whatever, just, you know, a half an hour here and there, it's good for your mental health.
Indeed. Supposedly, according to this book, 5 hours, the Finnish people, who, of course, are prone to depression due to the darkness up there, they found that 5 hours in nature is at least you want to spend 5 hours a week in nature. So try it. We'll give you 1 hour with our show.
It's always worked for me.
Good.
Is there anything else that we should know about this show that you'd like to share with us?
I should let you know that it is, as though it is intended to be somewhat relaxing, it's also funny. And I'm pretty proud of the fact that we got people like Neil deGrasse Tyson to play along. There's a brief appearance by a talking wolf in our show. Let's just say that it's not all going to be like hard science fact or just a dry dissertation on why nature is awesome. Hopefully it will be fun. Of course, everyone out there will be the judge. But now let me ask you the questions that we ask everyone on our show. We have two standard questions that we ask everyone on the show. And the first one is, if we were to meet you at a dinner party, what question should we not ask you? What are you tired of being asked?
Well, if it was me personally, do you do science like all the time when you're at home and stuff? Kids ask me that all the time because I'm a science teacher. And it's like, no. In fact, I kind of try to avoid it at all costs when I'm away from school. And
What does that even mean?
I think they think I'm out doing experiments or, you know, just reading textbooks and solving problems or whatever. I try to go listen to baseball games and play with my dogs.
Yeah, sure. They think that you're like sitting in a living room full of bubbling beakers and things.
Yeah, exactly. They just think, and they don't understand that their teachers are human beings, that when they go home, their teacher persona falls away and they're just normal people like everybody else.
Yeah, that's, kids have no idea.
When they see you in the store, like, you know, buying beer, they look at you like, oh my God, yes, I'm a human being and I drink beer too.
Is it weird? Is that like running into your therapist, you know, out in the wild?
My therapist is nature, you know, so when I run into her out in the wild, you know, it's an everyday occurrence. And I just tell her, it's like, I had a bad day, mother. Take care of me. Hey, one thing I do get asked a lot up in the park, and the ranger friends of mine get asked, it's pretty hilarious, is that people will come from here, there, and everywhere, and they'll ask, where's the volcano? And then you have to, you know, try to nicely tell them, you're standing in it, on it. It's every inch of this park is volcanic. You are in a volcano.
Oh, wow. And it's of course, Yellowstone, right? It's Yellowstone that is also a volcano, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It's a super volcano. We had Billy Bragg on the show one time, and we asked him what I'm about to ask you, which is our second question, which is, tell us something we don't know about anything that you want, either yourself or anything in the world. And he told us that Yellowstone was a giant supervolcano and it's due for an eruption at any moment. And when it goes, we're all dead. And I was like, great. I thought you were a nice, happy folk rocker. It turns out you're a doomsayer.
But now overstating it just a bit. I wouldn't go so far as any moment and all dead, but you know, there is some truth there. Go ahead.
So, but how about you? Tell us something we don't know.
Let me tell you something about Lassen Park, since that's really should be the focus of this. One of the things that always amazed me this is kind of interesting. Right now, we are doing this interview 102 years to the minute from the time of the great eruption of May 22nd, 1915. It erupted at exactly this time in the afternoon, right as we're speaking. If we went back in time 102 years in a TARDIS and were at the devastated area, we would be killed right now.
I don't know how to feel about that. How often do we think this volcano blows?
Well, here's the interesting thing, is that this mountain awoke in 1914, and people from all over the area crazily went up to the top of the mountain to look into the crater like it was, you know, some kind of a great amusement. They would take horses and dogs and their families and picnic and stand right next to the crater, you know, not realizing that it's like, you know, you're literally putting your face next to a giant explosive weapon here.
Yeah, yeah.
And the mountain, from the time it started erupting in May of 1914 to when it really wound down in 1917, it had three really big chances to kill people, and it didn't each time. The first time was June 14th. There was a photographer named Benjamin Franklin Loomis, who was a great character in park history. And he had one of those big old giant glass plate cameras. And he set it up and he was trying to get a sequence of eruption photographs. And the mountain started to erupting. At the same time, there was a bunch of mill workers standing up next to the crater. And the mountain started to explode with this giant steam and ash eruption.
As it does.
These guys dove down the mountain into the snow, you know, falling for their lives. And one guy got hit by a giant rock, well, a pretty good sized rock that came out of the mountain, a piece of rock that exploded out of the crater, hit him in the collarbone. Knocked him unconscious. They all thought he was dead, and they left him there. Later on, they came to get his body and found out this guy named Lance Graham was alive, so they took him down off the mountain, and he lived. Then a year later, May 19th, 1915, the mountain started to erupt actual lava, and this lava went into his giant banks of snow. They had as much snow as we have this year during 1915. It was a big snow year. Sure. And that lava hitting all that snow, that melted all that snow, created avalanches of water and rock, and that tumbling down and made a huge mud flow. And that could have killed a bunch of the settlers living below the mountain. But a dog heard this cacophony of noises up on the mountain.
That's amazing. First of all, what is the name of this dog? And B, is there a movie named after it?
We don't know the name of the dog, but unlike the dog in the Sherlock Holmes story, The Silver Blaze, this dog did bark in the night, and he woke everybody up. They heard the floods coming, warned their neighbors. Everybody got to safety. Nobody was killed. Then a couple days later, on May 22nd, B.F. Loomis was again, he came up to the flooded area to take pictures of the devastated area. And he was there in the morning of May 22nd. And he was taking pictures, and he saw this devastation. He's like, wow. And he was taking picture after picture. And they ran out of glass plates. And he said, well, it's time to go home. So they headed home in his little Model A Ford, and off they went. It was only about an hour or two later that the mountain blew up. Huge, huge steam eruption. It was like an atomic blast. Snapped huge pine trees, evergreen trees, like matchsticks. It would have killed them all. And again, the mountain killed nobody. So three times it had a chance to kill and never did. Nobody ever died from the eruptions.
So you're saying this mountain just kind of wants to let off steam. It doesn't want to hurt anybody. It's a very nice mountain.
Hey, we look forward to seeing you up here.
And I can't wait to be there and to meet you in person, sir, and to meet some of your listeners. I hope folks come up. I think it's free, by the way. It's free to come into our show. It's, I think, a fee to get into the park. But after that, it's free to get into our show. It's like pretty spectacular pre-show of just wandering around the park. So we do hope to see you.
But you are you're giving away tickets in advance because there is a limited number, right?
That is correct. So I would urge people to go to dinnerpartydownload.org/lookup to reserve a spot. And we hope to see you there.
Thanks. Rico, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to Rico Galliano from The Dinner Party Download. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Check out this and past shows at mynspr.org, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our director of communications is Casey Gardner. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR News or me at Dave Schlom. The mighty locomotive of recording excellence is engineered by Nolan Ford. He and I remind you, as always, that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.